From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Robin Hardwick from the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about why some individuals are able to control an HIV infection without taking any medications.
Dr. Robin Hardwick is an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston. She is involved in exploring treatment options for patients infected with HIV. Dr. Hardwick, thanks for joining us today. You were one of the researchers involved in a major study published in Science Express last week. The focus of the work was on trying to determine why some people are able to control an HIV infection without taking any medicines. Your research team came up with a key finding on a protein called HLA-B. What was the nature of the discovery concerning this protein?
Interestingly enough, there's about 3 billion nucleotides in the human genome, and just a handful of those make the difference between those who can stay healthy in spite of their HIV infection and those who, without any treatment, will or can develop AIDS. And our team was able to identify 5 amino acids in the protein called HLA-B that are associated with whether or not HIV-infected individuals can control their own viral levels with their immune system, not utilizing any treatment or any medicines at all. They're able to control the virus just solely on their own.
What makes HLA-B such an important protein, especially regarding its role in immune system function?
Well, the HLA-B, it's essential to the process by which the immune system recognizes and destroys viruses infected cells. And usually the HLA-B, it grabs onto a viral protein segment called peptides that are inside the cell, carries them into the cell membrane where they essentially flag the infected cell for destruction by CD8 or otherwise called killer T cells. So that portion of the HLA-B protein that grabs and displays viral peptides is called the binding pocket. Of all of the 5 identified amino acid sites in the lining, they're in the lining of the binding pocket. So the amino acid variation within the HLA-B binding pocket will impact its shape and structure, which probably results in some peptides being presented effectively and others not. So Dr. DeBacher and his team, they feel that the work that they have specifically done this time around demonstrates that these variants could make a crucial difference in the individual's ability to control HIV by changing how the HLA-B presents peptides from this virus to the immune system.
How did the HLA-B finding from this study build on what had already been learned from previous research that had demonstrated that certain genes involved with the HLA system were important for HIV control?
Well, the earlier study showed that certain genes involved with the HLA system were important for HIV control, but they couldn't tell us exactly which genes were involved, nor they couldn't tell us how they produced the difference. So the genome-wide association study take us not only to a specific protein, but to a part of the protein that's essential to its function.
This sort of leads to my next question, because for the past 20 years, scientists had known that about 1 in 300 people were able to suppress HIV replication with their immune system. How did this knowledge lead to the decision to carry out the genome-wide association study discussed in the Science Express paper?
Well, the decision was sort of obvious. There's curiosity, there's intrigue, science, and the effort toward finding a cure for this disease. So there's hopes that we can transform medicine with new genome-based knowledge. The Broad Institute actually seeks to describe all the molecular components of life and their connections to discover the molecular basis of major human diseases, and to develop effective new approaches to diagnostic and therapeutics and disseminate discoveries, tools, methods, and data openly to the entire scientific community. So it's obvious that this would be the next step in looking at this particular disease.
Would you provide the details on how this GWAS was actually carried out, which groups were involved in the study, what were the key findings, and if you could say a little bit more about the actual genes that were different among the people who were resistant to, were able to control their HIV infection?
Sure, that's a big question. So let me start with who all were involved. The international research team was led by investigators from the Reagan Institute of Massachusetts General Hospital, which included MIT and Harvard, from the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard. So the original support for the study came from a grant that was led by Dr. Florencia Pariah back in 2006, which was to identify genetic differences that underlie the ability of controllers to suppress the virus, with a goal of enrolling 1,000 HIV controllers from clinics and sites all around the world. So that was first funded by the Mark and Lisa Schwartz Foundation, and then it was expanded in 2008 through the support of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So with that expanded financial support, the goal was then increased to enroll 2,000 controllers. And so far over 1,500 have been enrolled to date, and another 2,600 individuals with progressive HIV have been enrolled as comparators. So in my HIV practice, individuals who had viral loads under 1,000 copies were consented to participate, and if they so agreed, blood was collected, and we shipped it to the lead investigators in Massachusetts for the analysis. So this was done by investigators all over the world that were working together on this project. The genome-wide association study then tested the samples, looking for tiny variants in the HLA protein, of which 300 sites were statistically associated with immune control of HIV, all in regions of the chromosome 6 that code for HLA proteins. So further analysis then narrowed the number of the gene sites to 4, but could not indicate whether those differences actually affected viral control or they were just located near the causal variants. So fully sequencing that genome region in all participants was not at all feasible. So a process was developed by Sherman Jai, who's a medical student in the Harvard MIT Health Sciences and Technology Program. He, working with Dr. Paul DeBacker at the Broad, they opened another key in the HIV Pandora box, as one would say, and pinpointed specific amino acids. In directly testing those sites, they were able to associate 5 specific amino acids in the HLA-B protein that showed difference in viral control. So out of those individuals that are able to control the virus on their own without medicine or therapy, they were able to pinpoint 5 specific amino acids in those individuals.
Now you're a specialist as an HIV clinician. How might the results of this study eventually be used to improve the treatment of HIV-infected individuals?
We can utilize this new information. We can sharpen our focus and efforts to ultimately harnessing the immune system to defend against HIV. That would be the ideal goal. I would personally like to see better treatments evolved, which are simplistic, efficacious against the virus, easily tolerated with fewer side effects. Knowing how an effective immune response against HIV is generated is an important step toward replicating a response with a vaccine. Now, we have a long way to go before translating all of this newly found information into treatments for infected patients and for a vaccine to prevent infection. But with the constant work of people like Dr. Bruce Walker, the director of the Reagan Institute and co-senior author of the Science article, we are just one step closer to developing those treatments and those vaccines.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.